Coffee Break, where Helena comes to talk.
Welcome into Coffee Break. I'm Troy Shockley. Thanks for joining us this morning. I do appreciate that. And kicking off the show today, Amanda Trum with the Montana Historical Society joining us. Amanda, thanks for coming in. I sure appreciate it.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Tell folks a little bit about you. You are the curator of collections out at the Historical Society. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about you first, and then how long have you been there at the Historical Society?
I have been there for about 11 years.
Okay.
As the curator of collections, my job is to care for the art and artifacts in the collection.
The one that tells me not to touch.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. There are lots of us there, though, who will tell you not to touch, but I'm one of them, right?
Okay. So how is that something that you get into?
I don't know. I actually was working on archaeology projects across the country, and I was in an overgrown cotton field in Louisiana in June, and I decided that I had had enough digging. And so I went back to graduate school for museum studies, and that's kind of how it started.
Okay. From here in Montana originally, or where are you from?
I'm originally from northern New York. I went to school in Florida, and then I moved out here about 11 years ago.
Yeah, so you're bouncing all over the map then.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but you eventually ended up in the right spot.
I think so.
So, that's good. So what does your day-to-day job look like as curator of collections? I mean, are you sort of just guiding everything as you're putting together new exhibits and that sort of thing?
It kind of depends on what we have going on. When I'm working on an exhibit, there's a lot of research and writing and choosing artifacts that happens. Otherwise, you know, it can be a little bit boring, like sitting in front of the computer answering emails and phone calls and that kind of thing. But, you know, generally speaking, it's pretty interesting work.
So every once in a while, you want to get back out there and dig a hole, right?
You know, I don't think I've ever had that urge
since
I left. Yeah, it's a little bit more fun now to sit in an air-conditioned building and look at what other people have dug up. Yeah.
Right. So you get to feature now at the Historical Society a new exhibit this weekend, something that's it's kind of been on display for a little bit, but you've been working on it, tinkering with it, making it better. Now it's cherry on top ready, right, for this weekend?
That's right. So we initially installed this exhibit, which is called End of the Last Ice Age, in May. We've been working on it since then. One of the main things was that we had commissioned an artist to create four large murals for the space. And so this artist actually works digitally. So they're digital. They were produced, you know, on a computer, but they're, you know, printed on the wall now. So that took a little bit longer than the artist expected. And so that's why it wasn't completely ready in May. We had to wait a little bit. And so finally, it's ready to go. And we're going to have a party this weekend to celebrate.
Yeah. Amanda Trum is our guest this morning. She is she's the curator of collections out at the Montana Historical Society. And as she said, we got a party coming up. It's the end of the last ice age. Just sort of aerial view. What is this display all about?
Good question. So it's about the prehistoric human habitation of Montana. So we talk about the widely accepted theory that humans first entered North America over the Bering Land Bridge, which was a huge swath of land about 1,000 miles wide that connected the Asian continent to the North American continent. And so we believe that people would have traveled in small groups over that, the land mass, and also along the coastline by watercraft. And so that's how we start the exhibit, but it's also focused on the oldest archaeological site in Montana, which is known as the Anzick Site, which is near Wilsall, Montana. And that is a site that was discovered in 1968, and it shows the Clovis culture that lived here at the time. And so we have lots of artifacts from the site, and it's actually a really, really interesting site. It's really important because it's the only known Clovis culture burial site in the world.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's really important.
Yeah, so that's something that my guess is a lot of us don't really know anything about, but something that we kind of have a claim to fame there, it'd be cool to learn about.
Yeah. So the site was dated to 12,600 years ago. Clovis culture is identified by the stone tool, the stone tools that they used. So the projectile points have a very distinct, it's called the flute, up the center of either side of the point. And so that's one of the ways that we know that it was Clovis culture. But yeah, it was really interesting. The burial was of an 18-month-old boy. And he was buried with about 100 of these stone tool and elk antler artifacts.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that reminiscent then of like Egyptian burials, that putting that in there? I mean, that he was an important person or belonged to an important family, or?
Right. So yeah, at this point, all of that would be speculation.
Mm-hmm,
so
sure.
Because it's the only burial, we don't know what other burials would have been like. But, you know, so either he was a very important person from a very important family, or, you know, maybe that's just how they buried everybody. And, you know, in that kind of special way with a lot of their resources, you know, the tools that they would have used would have taken a lot of time and energy to create. And so the fact that he was buried with 100 of them is pretty significant.
Yeah.
But yeah, we don't know if it's typical or not.
Yeah. We're talking with Amanda Trum. She's the curator of collections at the Montana Historical Society. They've got a cool exhibit that they've got a party. They've got a thing going on this weekend. It's on Saturday for the, it's an Ice Age exhibit. And it sounds like there's going to be a lot of activities that are experiential, a little bit hands-on type stuff.
Yeah, so we're really excited. We're going to have the opportunity for people to, we call it throw an atlatl. Technically, you don't actually throw the atlatl.
Right.
You hold it the whole time. And it's really a tool that you use to launch what we call a dart, which is kind of like a spear. So yeah, anybody who wants to try that will be able to do that. And we'll have a couple of targets set up that look like kind of goofy Ice Age animals. And so you can try to throw the atlatl and hit the darts, or hit the targets.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. I want to go out there and throw the atlatl. It's fun even just to say atlatl, let alone to throw it. So that's going on. It sounds like some hands-on stuff too, with replicas of skulls and that sort of thing.
Right. So those are part of the exhibit. We have a few different skulls from that are based on animals that lived in Montana during the end of the last ice age. So we have a replica woolly mammoth skull, a giant short-faced bear skull, dire wolf, and a giant beaver skull, which is really kind of fun to see.
Yeah, and those were massive animals, like the bear and the dire wolf. They were very, very big.
They were huge. So it's kind of fun to think about, you know, immersing yourself in that time and trying to imagine how you would have lived your life and, you know, just trying to stay alive every day.
Yeah, a giant beaver. That's like nightmare stuff right there. How important is it that we have some hands-on stuff that people can pick up, examine? I mean, it seems like it just brings something, just a different kind of experience to the learning.
I think so, yeah. We have tried over the years to incorporate more hands-on activities for people in the exhibits. You know, you can learn a lot from different types of exhibits, and of course you can learn a lot from artifacts that you can't touch, but it's a lot more fun to be able to touch things. So yeah, we're trying to get people in there and handling some of the things. We also have replicas of some of the ANZIC site tools that you can take a look at and handle. We have a life-sized scimitar cat head that's painted to look realistic, and so that's a touchable thing as well.
So there is a lot of stuff out there. I mean, did you anticipate this exhibit getting this big? It feels like you went, oh, and then this. And it's something that kind of grew.
That's exactly what happened. Yeah, we had, you know, the initial idea was on a much smaller scale. But then when you start getting into it, the subject is so interesting. And there were lots of different things that we could do with it. So we ended up actually tearing down walls, and it became a much bigger renovation than we initially thought.
How do you get that past the bosses, going, you know what, I need to take out this wall?
Yeah, well, no, that's a good question, too. And it just all comes down to the idea that it's really cool, so we should do it.
Yeah. Man, I want a kind of job where I can go in and say, here, we want to put it in a display. Okay, great. First, we need to take out this wall. That's
right.
Fantastic. We've got Ice Age coming up this weekend at the Montana Historical Society. We're talking with Amanda Trum. She's the one in charge of all the exhibits out there. Where did all the things that we're putting on display here, where do they come from? I assume it's sort of an on loan situation?
Well, with the Ice Age exhibit, this is atypical, but most of the pieces in the exhibit are on loan to us. There are a handful of archaeological artifacts that do belong to the Historical Society. So with this one, there are some things on loan to us from the Beaverhead County Museum and from the University of Montana's Paleontological Center, and also the three individual lenders of the Anzac site artifacts as well. You know, like I said, that's not really typical with most of our exhibits. The artifacts come from our collection.
Right. But this one is just, it's so big and it spans the state. I mean, you almost have to at some point bring in outside stuff, right?
Yeah. Well, it turns out that we didn't really have any Ice Age fossils, Ice Age era fossils in our collection. So that's why we look to other sources for that.
Okay. But, well, and it's got to be neat for them to be willing to do that as well.
Yeah, we're thankful to them for lending us those things. And, you know, I think for the most part, people are happy for these artifacts to be out so that the public can see them and, you know, instead of being in their drawers. And
yeah. Well, and there's so much great stuff. And when you're done out there, there's a lot of cool things to look at. Otherwise, at the Historical Society too, right?
Right. We've got the rest of our homeland exhibit, which the end of the last Ice Age is a part of. So that's a huge exhibit. We also have a large gallery of Charlie Russell paintings. We have an exhibit on World War I up right now, and also Indian portraits that Joseph Shirley painted several years ago around the turn of the century. So yeah, there's lots to see, not just the Ice Age stuff, but at this point, I think that's the coolest.
Yeah. Well, and that other stuff, that's the stuff you can't touch. She'll get mad
right.
If you touch. But and then swing on into the to the gift shop, because there's always something cool in the gift shop too.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm gonna throw a little plug out there for the gift shop, because it is a neat place.
Yes, and we're actually really excited about what they have in the gift shop now, because they're selling stuffed scimitar cats and mammoths.
Well, there
and,
you go.
You know, kids' Ice Age books and
that's early Christmas presents right there.
Exactly. Yeah. Or just, you know, start of school.
Yeah.
Gifts.
So when does this all start, Amanda? This is on Saturday, right?
Right. So it's this Saturday, the 7th. It starts at 11 and goes till 1 o'clock. I wanted to say thank you to Vans Thriftway. They are donating about 200 slices of cake for us to give away. So I guess the first 200 people that want cake will get free cake.
So you get your exhibit and cake too. That's not bad. For folks that don't know, where are you located?
We are across the street from the Capitol at 225 North Roberts.
Okay. And on Saturday, it's free admission as well, right?
That's right, yeah. So free admission to the museum itself and also to the party.
Man, you're checking off all the boxes of reasons that people should come
to
this.
Absolutely. There aren't any reasons to not go.
Right. Yeah. It's the end of the last Ice Age. It's coming up on Saturday at 11 at the Montana Historical Society. Amanda Trum has been our guest this morning. She is the curator of collections out there. She's the one most responsible. I'm going to give you all the credit for bringing
thanks.
This all together.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in today. I sure appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Stick around. We have more Coffee Break. Kevin Tenney with the Lewis and Clark County Fairgrounds is coming up next. I just wanted to step away from the show for a few seconds to tell you that if you miss an episode, you can always catch up. We're on iTunes, so find our show there or swing by coffeebreak959.podbean.com. Local and area events, city, state, and national officials, your neighbors doing incredible things. We talk to them all on Coffee Break, where Helena comes to talk. Now, back to our show. Welcome back into Coffee Break. I'm Troy Shockley. Thanks for sticking with us on this Thursday morning. I think I finally got my day straightened out with this shortened work week. It is Thursday today, and we got Kevin Tenney with the Lewis and Clark County Fairgrounds. Kevin, it's been a little while. How are you doing?
I'm rested.
Yeah,
I think.
Finally.
It took a good month and a half after fair, but I'm definitely got my rest in.
Yeah, because there's always something going on out there, but it's right around the fair. I mean, that's the big time, right? I mean, there's a little extra something going on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's we have a couple days, you know, we have about a week before the next event starts after fair, but That's a long week for me and our staff. I mean, I put in, I think, 110 hours the week of fair.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, and then you went on a little bit of a vacation after that, right? How was that?
I did. I got to go to the Atlantic coast right before the hurricane hit, so we got back just in time.
Yeah, you picked the right time for that. Exactly. You could actually relax rather than stress about the weather.
Exactly.
Yeah. So now you're all ready to go to finish out the summer out there.
We are. We're rip-raring and ready to go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the fair is certainly a very busy time for you and for the rest of the staff. How did that thing turn out ultimately as far as the event on the whole?
You know, I think my first coffee break was in August right after fair as manager of the fairgrounds, and I reported to you that we lost $18,000 on fair, and it wasn't the best situation to step into, but our finances are coming in, and it looks like we probably netted around $70,000 this year for fair. So that was a huge load off my shoulders, because you don't know. I mean, there's so many expenses that come in, and then you got your revenues coming in, and you don't know till about a month after fair where you're going to be at. And so I was biting my nails and waiting to see what those numbers turned into be, but it looked like a positive event this year.
Yeah, so we made a really big swing this year compared to last year.
Yeah, it was definitely a huge swing from last year.
Yeah, so now you're a year in, basically,
right?
As the guy out there, how do you feel? You feel like you've settled in a little bit?
Slowly but surely. Yeah. You know, I've been there for 15 years under Keith, but there's a lot of things I thought I knew that I didn't know. A year in, still not where we need to be staff wise. It's the maintenance position is really hard to fill. It's hard work. And it seems like we'll get someone in there that's not really ready to work. And so it's difficult, but we got a good crew there now, and we're just ready to go.
Yeah. Well, and we talk about the fair, the concerts out there, they were both fantastic. They put on great shows.
They did. I thought, Clint Black's Clint Black, but the most thing I heard was how entertaining Low Cash was. I mean, I obviously didn't get to see any of it, but I heard they put on a heck of a show, and then Clint Black was a lot more entertaining than a lot of people were thinking.
Well, they're thinking, man, Clint Black, he's been around for a while, but he's always put on a good show.
Yeah, he puts on a very entertaining show. So yeah, it went well. I like that double headliner. So already starting to look for next year, and I think we'll do that again, where we do, instead of an opener and a headliner, we'll do two full headline shows. Just don't know who that's going to be yet.
Right. Yeah. We have no announcement to make there.
No, that'll be a while.
Yeah. So money wise, you were saying, you know, like $70,000 on the right side of the ledger. Right. How does that compare to just years in general?
You know, it's fluctuated. There's been years we've made $10,000. This is our second highest net event, so we've done better. We've seen $80,000 in the net side. So,
but you can't really complain about what you got. I mean, that's a fantastic event.
No, I'm 100% happy with how that turned out.
Yeah, Kevin Tenney with the Lewis and Clark County Fairgrounds is our guest this morning, and now I guess you start work on next year's fair, right?
Right.
I mean, that takes a long time. Most of it is getting those acts to come in, right? Just because there's so many people trying to get acts come in across the country, it's a very competitive thing.
It is, and it's getting harder and harder because more shows are being put on. But yeah, we've already got some ideas, and we're checking costs because we could go spend $500,000 and take a huge risk, but we're finding out, let's stick with what we know and try to bring some good acts in and stick on, you know, stick where we've been. I think if we spent $500,000 on an act, we'd still get 3,300 to 3,500 people here for a fair. So then it's we'll stick with what we know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's working.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Don't fix it if it's not broken. We got about 7 minutes left for the top of the hour, and we've been talking about what has happened out there, what's coming up. You got a big event out there this weekend. It's the Big Sky Celebration featuring Will Graham. What does that thing look like? Because that's one of those things where you've got a group bringing in all their stuff. They're using your place, but they kind of run their own thing, but you have to run some. I mean, there's a lot of working together to make that thing go off the way it's supposed to.
All right, this is 6 months in planning. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've been on the phone with these guys a couple times a week for 6 months. I mean, they are a crew that wants to put on a great event for their followers. But yeah, it's a huge ordeal. It started Monday. They did a little celebration on Monday night for a select amount of people. I mean, we're having to bring in crews to run parking for them. We're running crews to set up the 1,000 chairs that they need set up. And yeah, I mean, it's a huge event. I don't know exactly how it's ran, but working closely with them. It's a huge deal. I mean, this is a traveling show. I mean, mm-hmm. they're going to be in Great Falls, and then they're going to be everywhere. So there's 20 people that have a hand in talking to us on just their part of the show, whether it's production or catering. I mean, it's a big deal.
So how many people are you anticipating as far as folks from Helena or the surrounding areas coming into this thing?
They're predicting a couple thousand.
Okay.
Over the 3 days.
Because it's a multi-day event.
Yeah, it starts Friday and then goes through Sunday.
Okay. And it's free too, right?
It is. Yeah, I think you have to get a ticket from right. them, but there's no cost for the ticket.
Yeah, so that always increases your attendance, right?
Right, absolutely.
So a couple thousand people heading out there this weekend, no big deal. That'll, you know, your guys will be able to handle that.
Absolutely. They're yeah. ready.
Well, and then next weekend, the Diamonds and Denim Coronation. That's the coronation of Hunter Brewer. She's our newest Miss Last Chance Stampede. That's been a cool thing, kind of bringing that back.
Yeah, this is our second year bringing it back, and I'm sure most people don't know that Kayla Seaman was last year's Miss Last Chance. Mm-hmm. It went on to win Miss Rodeo Montana, yeah. and will be competing this year in Vegas for Miss Rodeo America. So, I mean, first year in, and we get Miss Rodeo Montana right. out of it. So, yeah, I think it's a good event. That committee does a good job.
Yeah, and she's fantastic. She's been on the show a few times, and absolutely love having her in. Actually, Hunter was in as well here recently, ahead of the fair, and really impressive young lady. And this is going to be it's a coronation event for her, but it serves as a bit of a fundraiser too, because in order to go on to, you know, those other events, takes money, obviously.
Oh yeah, yeah. She does training and stuff and goes to Seattle, all kinds of things. So yeah, she does a good job, and hopefully she represents us well at the circuit finals again this year.
Yeah, so fundraiser for Hunter, money raised there, helping her on her way to Miss Rodeo Montana. We've got a title to defend there, so we want to help her out. She'll need lots of travel, wardrobe, clothing, not an inexpensive thing. Tickets for $26. There's going to be a dinner, silent auction, drawing. There's no host bar.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of good things going on there. Coming up after that on September 19th, that's another multi-day event. You got a lot of multi-day events coming up this month. That the place goes to the dogs there, right?
Right. The Gallatin County and the Helena Kennel Club put on a four-day dog show. And if you're a fan of the canines, every breed of dog in the world is there over those 4 days. We're talking thousands of dogs.
Yeah.
Or if you're a fan of fancy RVs, come down to the fairgrounds, because there's a lot of those around there too.
Yeah, so that's like a dual event, right? You can come down for the RV show.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't think they're selling the RVs.
No, but yeah. you could window shop.
There you go.
Yeah, I think that'd be Kurt. I think Kurt wants to head down for that portion of the thing. I can see Kurt window shopping some RVs. I might swing in. Yeah, so the Helena and Gallatin County Fall Dog Show. They put on a really good show too. This is a repeated thing. They're not new to this. It's a good event.
It is. These people that bring their dogs, I mean, they end up at what's it called? Westminster.
Yeah.
I mean, these are top of the line shows. That this isn't just a local group that tries to put on a dog show. I mean, people come from everywhere.
Yeah, I know you guys have watched it on Thanksgiving when you don't want to watch the Lions in that game. You're waiting for the Cowboys game to come on you watch the dog show. So that's what it is, but it's going to be here at the Lewis and Clark County Fairgrounds. That's coming up, starts on September 19th, runs for a few days there. And then the final weekend of the month, it's the Last Chance Community Powwow. That starts on the 27th, I think.
If that's a Thursday or a Friday.
A Thursday? I can pull up my calendar here. Yeah, that's a Friday. So yeah, Friday, Saturday, yeah. Sunday, right?
Yeah, Friday they'll bring the school kids in. The schools bus the kids in to see this event, and it's a longstanding tradition at the fairgrounds. It's a great event.
Yeah, that's going to be another one that I would guess brings in an awful lot of people.
It does. It's a very busy weekend down there.
Yeah. So and now that you've got your vacation in, you get to really go back to work this month. This is not a slow month for you.
No. We're planning a couple new events. October 5th, we're doing, it's actually not a new event, second annual Wall of Honor Banquet, but we're turning it into an appreciation for the Friends of the Fairgrounds. It's a catered dinner, live music, open bar, just a great event where we honor people that have had contributions to the fairgrounds mm-hmm. over the years. This year we're inducting Fanny Sperry Steele, Lauren Davis, Robert Sunny Bright, and Mary Jane Rice. They're all huge contributors in the past to the fairgrounds. Last year we did 10, was our first year mm-hmm. of inducting them. This year we're shrinking it down a bit, but it's a great, great event. Public's welcome. If you just want to come for the band and the drinks, you can pay $10. I think it's at 7:30 is when we open it up to the public.
Right.
We're inviting all Friends of the Fairgrounds. So.
Very cool. And that's coming up October 5th. So check that out. Get on the webpage, get on the Facebook page, and check it out. Kevin, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Troy Shockley, and that's it for Coffee Break today. Be sure to check us out on iTunes. Head on over. Give us a review there. That's always much appreciated. Or swing by coffeebreak959.podbean.com. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you back here tomorrow.